Episode 42, Riding on Star Wars Coattails. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/strangers. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast. My name is Ben Avery and I have been told never to introduce yourself saying my name is, but I did anyway.
Me llamo Esteban Maldonado.
You're not supposed to say my name is.
But I said it in Spanish. Does that count?
Yeah, it counts. We both did it. Just ruined the podcast.
We're quitting. Steve McDonald.
Oh, that,
how's that? Huh?
Okay, that's better. That's better and almost made up for it.
So,
we are here to talk about a topic I've been wanting to do for a little while now, simply because I've been watching some of these movies. We are talking about movies that were made because of Star Wars. I want to say, Steve, that I believe Star Wars, and I've said this before, Star Wars both gave science fiction new life in the popular consciousness, but also kind of cause science fiction to lose some of its veneer, some of its legitimacy, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, it was definitely sort of like, you know, hey, look, they can do this on $10 million. We can do something on $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're going to talk about some movies that were big budget movies that would not have happened if Star Wars had not been made and movie studios were not trying to make money off of Star Wars.
And some of them are small budget movies and some of them are not movies at all.
That's true as well. Yes.
Some of them are just crappy.
Some of them just plain stink. But Star Wars came out in 1977. It changed cinema and it changed science fiction. Do you remember the movie Escape from Gilligan's Island?
Yes.
Do you remember the scene? I remember this vividly, and I don't know why I remember it so vividly. There's a scene where Ginger was trying to get jobs in movies, and every movie she wants to be, or every movie she is auditioning for, has all these four-letter words. And I remember Gilligan coming in, and they're visiting her, and the executive comes in, and she's complaining, and then Gilligan says, well, what about Star Wars? It didn't have any four-letter words in it. And then the movie studio executive's like, oh, that's right! And so he instantly changes his whole paradigm. He's going to make some movies that are not, you know, these four-letter words, these gritty movies.
Right.
And then I remember Gilligan, Skipper, and Ginger all having a group hug, and Gilligan saying, what about love? Love is a four-letter
word.
So that's what happened, though. I mean, that.
You want to hear a funny story about that, though?
Sure, I do. About what?
Star Wars was my first PG movie that I ever saw in the theater.
And it did have the word hell in it.
It had the H word and it had the D word in it.
Oh,
and
I think we can say the word, I think.
I guess. But my dad, after I saw the movie, because it was at a birthday party, I was brought there. I wasn't there with my parents. He sat me down and he like quizzed me a little bit. He didn't use the words, but he was like, was there any words that began with S? And I'm like, no, nothing like that. And I'm like, why are you quizzing me about this? Because he knew PG rated movies sometimes had bad language.
Yeah.
And he hadn't seen the movie, so he wanted to, you know, make sure that I was getting the proper influences. And So I had to sort of walk through his first letter references to all these bad words. And I couldn't even remember. I mean, it was such a, you know, a bomb going off in my brain that I couldn't remember what words I had heard.
And it's funny to even think about now that
I know
that would have been impossible. I mean, it was a huge family hit. I think that was another big part of it, was Star Wars was huge for families. And I mean, I don't know how old you were when you saw it in the theater. Ten? Okay, yeah. I was 3 or 4. I think I was 4 years old. I remember my cousin had seen it. And so when my grandma gave me Chewbacca and Darth Vader action figures, my cousin told me that Chewbacca couldn't talk because I was making them talk to each other. And so my cousin had seen it, but he lived in the States. And I, you know, then went and saw it in the theater, and then went and saw Empire Strikes Back in the theater. And I mean, it just changed our lives, basically, you and me. But let's get away from that right now, and let's move on to how it changed Hollywood and some of the things that happened because of this movie and the studio execs, like the guy from the Gilligan's Island movie, who said, you know what? I'm going to change everything. Let's get something that out there that can ride on these coattails.
Yeah.
Steve, these I've got a list.
Coattails were made for riding.
I've got a list. You've got a list. We're not going to go in any particular order. We're just going to start talking about some of these, and the conversation will, I think, go to other places as well with this. Okay. The first one that I thought of is probably also one of the more successful of the post-Star Wars ripping off period. Okay. And this is a movie that was greenlit because of Star Wars. And because it was greenlit, it totally changed another... I mean, it became another paradigm shift for science fiction. And that is Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, without Star Wars, we wouldn't have Star Trek The Motion Picture. And without Star Trek The Motion Picture, we wouldn't have Star Trek II. And without Star Trek II, we wouldn't have Star Trek IV. And around that same time, we wouldn't have had TV studios get interested in another Star Trek series.
Right.
And we wouldn't have Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, and just the huge, huge franchise that it became.
Right.
Steve, I'm going to make you do something here. As we're going through this list and we bring up a title, I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to answer myself, if this falls on the light side of the Force... or the dark side of the Force. Was this a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay.
And well, I will let you decide how you want to quantify that, and
so
I will quantify it my own
that
way.
Any way possible?
Any way you want to. Let's say choose one, though. And because
well, okay, let me just weed it out.
Okay.
Because almost none of these would have any like really good spiritual significance. So instead of just giving the dark side to all of them, I'll quantify it a different way.
And you say all of them on the list?
I'm trying to think of anything on this list that I would say would be
I think
on the
some,
light side
some,
spiritually.
There's some. Not
I
a
can't,
lot. But,
I can't. I can't.
Well, I'm just going to go out there and say it. I think that Star Trek The Motion Picture would fall on the light side of the Force for two reasons. One, personally, I like the movie. And two, without it, we wouldn't have had what we ended up with as far as Star Trek goes.
Yes. So I'm just going to leave the spiritually stuff to other people.
Yes.
I think impact wise, this probably was the biggest impact of the Star Wars movie being successful.
If Dr. Jace was here, we'd have a lot of fun with him on this one because he hates this movie, but I like it and I will defend it. And any criticism anyone can come up with against this movie, well, you might have some valid criticisms, but
you know what? I mean, in all honesty, it's a little draggy for people who like just the action movies.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
if it's just action you're looking for, you're going to have to bear with it. But the impact of it, I mean, they're using the Voyager spacecraft. Spoiler.
Well.
You know,
we're talking about a 30-year
spoiler
spacecraft here,
which had just been sent out. So they're using these cultural things. It's building on the space shuttles that had just been launched. And I think the first one was called Enterprise because of the Enterprise. So it was hitting at this like sweet spot.
And you know, the other thing with that is that's another reason why Star Wars was such a hit was that they were just kind of starting to reach out a little bit more into space after having had the moon stuff, you know, shut down with the, when they come out with the shuttle and they're flying around with this shuttle thing, or they're getting ready to anyway. Well, but that brings me to another one that is another popular franchise, but this one did not help the franchise.
No.
Yes, it did not help the franchise. The franchise existed for a long time before Star Wars. And basically the franchise just tried to rip off anything that was popular that that year. Can you guess what I'm talking about?
It's something that had existed before Star Wars.
It existed before Star Wars.
That this was continuing on.
And this was a part of that.
That's a stumper. I can't.
This is a franchise that existed before Star Wars. And then, you know, 1977, Star Wars was popular. So they were going to make a different movie. But instead, they chose to make this movie because it could have a space theme. And that's James Bond, Moonraker.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a total ripoff. Hey, let's just, Star Wars. Okay. Let's make one. let's go into space and make a movie that's half on Earth where they're running around and doing a, you know, National Geographic travel log and, you know, shooting in these great cities. And then we'll go up into space and have space marines with laser guns on their spacesuits.
Right. So. Yeah.
So we have Moonraker from James Bond, which also used the space shuttle frenzy as well. The space shuttle hadn't gone up yet, but it was going to. It was supposed to actually have been in space before the movie came out, and they were going to use footage of the space shuttle taking off and using it in the movie. But because it hadn't launched yet, they had to come up with special effects and figure out what it would look like. So, you got one?
I do. I also have one.
Oh, that, wait. Moonraker. Light side or dark side?
I haven't seen it in such a long time. I couldn't.
Yes, you can. I'm putting right on the dark side right now.
I'll have to just go by what you, you know, your recommendation and put it on the dark
side. Well, I like watching it, but it's not a very good movie. And it's definitely not a very good James Bond movie.
Yeah.
So,
okay. The only times I would have seen it is like during some James Bond marathon.
Yeah.
That it would just be on in the background or something. I have one that that definitely was inspired by Star Wars and actually did end up launching its own very popular, very successful series.
Okay.
And that's Alien.
Yes, me too.
And I love the film. A little language-y for me, but. But,
well, that was one of those four-letter word movies that Ginger wouldn't have been in.
No. But, it's very real. And what I liked a lot was, especially at the beginning of the film, they just basically let the actors talk naturally. And they're sitting around the table, and they're just jawing. They're talking about whatever. And it just lent that authentic feel to the movie. It didn't feel scripted.
Right. Yeah.
And then of course the alien and the all that. I mean, the them being in a locked room in space, just very interesting dynamic.
Well, and some of the reactions to some of what happened on screen were also authentic, because it was like there's the one with the chest burster on the table. Mm-hmm. And some of the actors didn't realize how much blood there actually was going to be in that scene.
Yeah.
And so they were, some of those screams and reactions to that were authentic and real. So, all right. So that is, Alien, light side or dark side, Steve? That's going to be a harder one to answer.
Well, as an impact, impactually, I would say, light side initially. I think the series sort of got off track and later on, but initially, you know, I think it it helped. Having it be successful was important for a lot of movies that followed afterwards.
Yeah, that's true. I almost feel bad saying light side. And Why? But on the other hand, it is a really, it's a brilliantly made movie. And here's the thing about it. They pulled some of the best stuff from Star Wars. Other than, you know, not doing the Moonraker where it's just, oh, let's just do this because it's popular, it's space. But that lived-in universe that Star Wars definitely. Had.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you've got...
the Nostromo ships.
Yeah, I mean, it's a truck, you know? It's like the Millennium Falcon. It's meant to be lived in and meant to, you know, it's greasy. It has moving parts and has lights and computers, but, you know, they've got to keep this thing going, and they, you know, they're down there getting their hands dirty, trying to fix it. And, and that vibe in sci-fi, you know, Star Wars kind of started it, but then it went and, you know, with Alien, it kind of really said, you know, here, look at this. This is great. You can turn this ship into a living, breathing location.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, the ship was no Enterprise. It wasn't the Millennium Falcon. It didn't have that feel to it. But it definitely sort of had an entity about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was more silent. It was more, you know, it was like almost like it held secrets, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it had hiding spots and nooks and crannies, and
yeah,
it wasn't just hallways.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, with Enterprise, you had the bridge, you had hallways, you had the engine room, and they were all really clean. Like, they never that. Showed the cleaning crew, but it was a really, really good cleaning crew that they had in the Enterprise. Their money. So.
Or their credits. Or they don't have money, I guess. Do they?
Yeah.
I can give you $100. Is that a lot?
Oh, that's right. I never understood how that worked. Because they would go places and buy things. You know, they bought Tribbles, but they didn't have money. I don't... how did that work?
Well, I think they just, you know... I mean, they're the Federation, so they... It's like, hey, we need enough money to buy Tribbles. And then someone back home said, let's see, the market for Tribbles is X to the a Y. And here you go. And they, you know, replicate the money. And
yeah. And or is there like just a pot that the Federation has, a pot of money that you can just kind of dip into? Or Starfleet has that.
It might be a pot.
Because, you know, I was listening to a podcast about pirates the other day when I was, you know, vacuuming the sanctuary of my church. And they were talking about this pirate gang, almost like a pirate army, and they actually had rules about how to use the treasure coffers, and you could use it with certain permission, and certain boats that hadn't had a good plunder recently could go, and they could draw from the treasury. And yeah, so maybe it was like that for the Federation. So Uhura didn't have money of her own. She was just pulling on from the Federation, because they know you want to deal with Ferengi, you got to have money. So... All right. You got another one you can share? You said your list wasn't very long. My list isn't very long, but another movie or whatever that would not have happened without Star Wars.
Let's see. Well, how about one that was a remake of something that was popular back in the 50s, and they sort of greenlit it, I believe, because of the success of Star Wars.
And that would be?
Can you guess?
Remake from the 50s?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess Flash Gordon?
No.
No?
But wow, I should have had that on my list.
Yeah, I realize it's not on my list either.
Well, I thought that was one of the... Actually, I think you sent a preliminary list, and I think it was on that list. Along with Buck Rogers and a couple other
things. Well, and Flash Gordon obviously wouldn't have happened without Star Wars.
No.
I mean, they made that movie to be the next Star Wars.
Right.
And was it the next Star Wars?
No, it wasn't. But, it was just...
Can you imagine if it had?
It was like 1 inch from good. It was so close.
That's a good way of putting it for that movie. That's a really good way of putting it for that movie. Flash Gordon is worth seeing once, for sure.
And you know what? There are parts to it that are rewatchable.
You know, and there are parts to it that are groan worthy.
Yes, that are hard to watch. It's a good movie to have on in the background because you can do something else And then, oh, wait, here's the good part, you know? So it's, I would still put it on the light side.
Okay. I don't know if I could put it on the light side.
It had, well, had Queen music. It had, I mean, it was just continuing that, that feel. And they, you know, it, they camped it up, but they did keep so many aspects of the original.
A surprising amount of aspects. And even when it was difficult to do well, that was the other thing. I mean, the Hawkmen.
Yeah. And, I think I would prefer the Filmation version. I think it came out a year before or something. Yeah, the cartoon. Yeah. But I wouldn't discount the live action one because I like the cartoon better. Yeah. But actually, the one I was thinking of was Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Ah, interesting. So you think that was greenlit because of Star Wars?
I think so.
It probably was. I mean,
Leonard Nimoy was in it, so I think they were trying to capture.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, you wouldn't have guessed Leonard Nimoy.
I wouldn't have guessed that title.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have at all. So.
Well, just very, very old school. I think, you know, and in some ways, it's the type of thing that they could have launched into a series or at least a franchise.
I don't know. That would have been difficult.
Would have been difficult, and it would have been a different feel to it. But, you know, at the same time, they could have. It would have been more of a, how are we going to deal now with this invasion on a long-term scale and working through it that way.
Yeah.
So I think it had an opportunity to do it. I don't think it was as successful as they needed it to be, though.
Oh, absolutely not. It wasn't successful. From what I can understand, it wasn't very successful.
No.
I liked it when I saw it.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it until I was an adult and could appreciate it. I mean, it's a movie about the 70s. I mean, definitely. That is a product of the time. I mean, Leonard Nimoy, he plays, what, a psychologist?
Something like that.
But it was like at the beginning of that self-help kind of revolution, and you got the swinging kind of vibe to the characters. And isn't there a Turkish bathhouse even? I think
it was filmed all in a Turkish bathhouse.
But there's, yeah, I mean, it's very much a product of the 70s. The way Invasion of the Body Snatchers in the 50s was really tapping into the culture of that time with the Red Scare and how anyone could be an enemy. Yeah. And then in the 70s, kind of taking it, and I'm watching the movie and thinking to myself that it's about kind of the disconnectedness of culture there. Light side or dark side?
Oh, I'm going to have to put it on the dark side.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't think it had any cultural impact, really. You know, I think it was a reaction in a lot of ways. To Star Wars, to the culture and things like that. They just happened to get Leonard Nimoy.
And I might put that on the light side because I like the movie. So
you monster.
I am. Now you're going to point at me and scream. Don't scream too loud. Well, I've got one that would not have gotten made without Star Wars.
Okay.
And this was one that had a huge, huge, huge studio behind it. And a huge, huge, huge budget, but they still spent it and ended up having to make some compromises.
And what is that?
That is The Black Hole from Disney.
Yeah, The Black Hole.
That movie obviously got made because of Star Wars, and the way they marketed it, the marketing was kind of trying to follow Star Wars model with storybooks and... Mm-hmm. I remember I had a storybook with punch-out cardboard figures that you could punch out of the book. And then each page, you turn the page, and it was a different scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, setting for the movie. And they had the robots that you could buy, the action figures, and had the record stories and everything like that. I mean, they wanted this to be another Star Wars.
Yeah, I remember going to Disney World, Florida in 1980 and making sure that I had enough money to get the comic books. They had all three of them. I think it was like a three from Dell or Whitman or whatever. And
But again, that was just them trying to, you know, Star Wars had the comic books. And so, yeah, let's get in there with Black Hole comic books. And the unfortunate thing is it was trying to be Star Wars and 2001 at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it was, again, it was also a combination of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and The Tempest from Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And it just, man, I like it. I just watched it with my son actually recently, and he liked it. You know, if you think the ending of 2001 is confusing, the ending of The Black Hole, yeah, it's the same ending.
Pretty much.
But it had some cool ship design.
Yeah.
And honestly, cool robot design too. I thought so.
Hit and miss. I mean,
well, you basically had four designs. You had the troopers, and you had
kind of cool.
Yeah, and you had Maximilian.
Yeah,
and so the troopers were basically the cannon fodder, and they're walking around getting zapped at. And then you have Maximilian, who's this basically the Darth Vader type of character,
mm-hmm.
Or the Caliban type of character who, he has lasers and he has spinning saw blade things, and he floats, and he was menacing. When I was a kid, that guy freaked me out, and I never saw the movie. I was only watching clips on, you know, The Wonderful World of Disney on Sunday night.
Nice.
So, yeah, and then you had Bob, and what was the other robot's name? I can't remember his name now. But yeah, the two floating R2-D2s.
Yeah, I think that's where it suffered a little bit, is you had these two things that were a little bit too much like floating R2-D2s.
But they talked. Yeah. So, I mean, and this is something my son, he saw, you know, it looks like R2-D2, but it talks like C-3PO. You know, it's like, this. Oh, we can't do both. What if we put them together? Then we're not ripping it off. Yeah. Right?
R2-D3PO.
Yeah. So it's an enjoyable movie, somewhat. It doesn't have the energy of like Flash Gordon, though, to make you kind of be able to go along for the ride.
Yeah.
So if you like slower sci-fi, then you'll like this. But so light side or dark side? I'm going to say, unfortunately, the Black Hole, the dark side.
Yeah. You sort of have to. It didn't add anything.
Okay, what do you got for me? Another one.
All right. Let's see. Well, I am going to go. I was going to save this for the end, but I think it sort of fits right here.
Okay.
Laser Blast.
Yeah. Laser Blast. I forgot about that movie.
How awful.
Oh, yes.
That movie.
That is so bad.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And I wanted to see it so bad.
Oh yeah.
Because they kept having articles about it in Starlog magazine,
mm-hmm.
and advertisements for it. And they had like the cool creatures.
Yeah.
The stop motion aliens who show up at the beginning. And I think at the end.
And the guy with the face, you know, his face is getting.
Uh-huh. And the laser gun on his arm.
Yeah.
And my favorite scene is probably your favorite scene as well.
It's everyone's favorite scene.
Where they're driving by and he shoots the billboard for Star Wars.
And of course.
Because Laser Blast was so much better.
Yeah. It's like, kill your influences.
Oh. Mystery Science Theater did one with that movie.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And it was really funny. But this is bad and fun without them. It's bad and fun with them too, but.
Yeah,
man, yeah, if you're going to watch that one, watch it with friends, because
it's awful.
Oh, and a very, very much a product of the 70s as well. With
the
vans that they're driving around and the short shorts and whatnot. Yeah. Wow. Good one. Dark side, definitely for me, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The darkest. That's very dark.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that movie would not have happened without Star Wars. And, you know, they had the stop motion creatures at the beginning and it looked, it didn't look bad. It didn't look good though. That's the problem, is it wasn't, it wasn't a step further with anything. It was just, okay, well, we want to copy Star Wars, but we don't have the budget. So we'll just do things the way they used to. And we're not going to, you know, they didn't have any kind of vision to, you know, push the boundaries at all. It was just,
right,
let's make this little movie and get our paycheck. Wow. Laser Blast. What a blast from the past, man. Nice blast one. From the past. All right. Another movie. Steve, I know you've seen this movie. I don't know how many of our listeners will have seen this movie, but if you haven't seen this movie, if you are into some of these bad movies that we're talking about, you need to check this one out. Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yes. Battle Beyond the Stars, starring John Boy Walton as Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, okay, so Star Wars is Hidden Fortress, a Kurosawa film.
Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress, yeah.
Yeah, and they, you know, made it into a science fiction movie. And so with Battle Beyond the Stars, it's like they said, hey, let's take a different one.
Yeah, how about?
How about we take Seven Samurai and turn that one into a science fiction movie? So they did. And it's the same exact plot as Seven Samurai. It's the same exact plot as Magnificent Seven, the Western. It's the same exact plot as, was it A Bug's Life? It's the same exact plot as, oh, I mean, it just happens over and over again, where you have the little village of weak, ineffectual farmers. You have the warlord coming in, demanding crops. And then you have one of them go off to get people to help fight off the warlord, and they can only get seven people. Mm-hmm. And they come back and they teach the people of the village how to fight, and then they fight the warlord.
Didn't they do this in issues 7, 8, and 9, and maybe 10 of the Star Wars comic too?
It's possible.
Do you remember that?
Where, I actually haven't read those.
Han and Chewbacca go to the planet, and there's the rabbit.
If they did, then yeah,
that's and the rogue funny. Jedi. I think it was what was his name? Don Quixote or something. I mean, it was based on, you know, Don Quixote, but it was anglicized, and there were seven of them. I think it was, you know, seven against
that's
the stars.
Awesome! I need to check that out. George Martin put a spin on it with his Hedge Knight Sworn Sword.
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, he took that, kind of turned it on its head, where they're trying to teach the villagers to fight against the other army, the opposing army, and they realize there's no hope. We can't possibly train these people to fight against an armed and trained army, and so we're gonna figure something else out. And that's, I love the way it just turns that whole concept on its head.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't help that I got to write the script for the comic book. That was there's my plug for the day. But
it was a very cool comic book too.
Well, thank you. I liked it. So, Battle Beyond the Stars, I saw it when I was young on TV at some point, and went back and rewatched it. I think it was on Netflix. So I watched it again a year ago, and I was amazed, I tell you, to find that it really was a space warlord coming to get crops from the planet. Like, he wants them to grow space crops.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even change that. Light side or dark side?
Dark side.
I'm putting it there on the dark side as
and
well.
You can't have a discussion of Battle Beyond the Stars without mentioning Space Raiders, of course, which is another perfect example in our list. But
Space
it uses a lot
Raiders.
Of the... It recycles a lot of the visuals from Battle Beyond the Stars. And of course, that would be resting deeply into the dark side.
Well, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment about that.
Okay. Well, let me veer into TV land.
Let's go there.
I have a couple of really interesting TV examples here. The first one, and I, in researching the list, I initially had it on my list, but then when I was researching it, I realized that it actually came out, the pilot was released the same month that Star Wars was released in the theater.
Oh.
But it wasn't greenlit until the next year, until 1978.
Buck Rogers?
No.
No? I have no idea what you're talking about then.
I don't know. I don't know if anyone would know what I'm talking about. It's a terrible little TV series called Quark.
I have heard about Quark. I have not seen Quark. I have been curious about it, but not enough to actually buy it.
Well, there's a lot of situations. It's a family podcast. I'm trying to allude to... let's just say that there's more than one woman on board. And it's a garbage scow. And they're going, doing scow-like missions. And it was tongue-in-cheek. It was comedy. It was riffing on the same things, and it failed. But it was riffing on the same things that was later picked up by Spaceballs and Galaxy Quest and other good science fiction comedies. none that come to mind readily. Which also leads me to Salvage One.
I don't even... I'm lost now. Salvage One?
Andy Griffith.
What?
In 1979...
What? What?
And it actually ran for a season and a half. Salvage One. He basically makes a salvaged rocket ship and takes it to the moon, or at least into space. I don't remember everything about the show.
But well, we can look it up on our special guest who is visiting us from the Sci-Fi Christian.
The Sci-Fi Christian. Fellow losers of the podcast awards.
Which is Wikipedia. Salvage One. Salvage.
Andy Griffith.
One. American science fiction series that aired for 16 episodes.
Maybe it was two half seasons or something.
Isaac Asimov served as the show's scientific advisor.
Yeah. Way to knock one out of the park, Isaac.
Oh, my goodness. So was this a comedy?
I think it was a loose comedy. It had Andy Griffith, who is a great comedian.
Right.
But I don't think it was like, it wasn't Quark. It wasn't, like a heavy handed. I think it was more, comedy of errors type thing. But maybe I'll check it out again.
I've got to find this. I'm going to look on Netflix and see if it's there.
It might be in YouTube as well.
It's not going to be there. Salvage.
If anyone knows where we can get our hands on the 16 episodes of Salvage One.
Well, 16 were aired and 20 were produced.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they produced 20 episodes of that show. Oh, so, man, I need to see that. Okay.
And then, of course, the sequel, Salvage Two. Oh, just joking. That was a joke there.
It was a joke. I'll go with
that. I have two more strictly TV ones.
And I know what they are.
What are they?
Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica.
Well, I was going to say strictly TV as in never in the theaters. And both of those were actually in the theaters.
Oh, well, thank you.
So you didn't
strictly
get
TV, okay.
Strictly TV.
Jason of Star Command.
You got it.
And
you got to think, this was probably 83 or 84, but it was very definitely influenced by the whole Star Wars thing.
I can't think of what it is.
It was a series.
Jason of Star Command. Was it live action?
It was live action. It was one letter.
One letter? You got me.
V.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, V.
Definitely. Which Jason of Star Command, I was surprised how bad it was when I watched it on Netflix recently.
Well, it was made for kids.
It was made on a shoestring budget, and you know how I knew this? Because they used actual shoestrings to make the robots fly. I mean, you could see.
That's awesome.
Oh, my kids, my son is pretty tolerant and he likes things that are different and he likes things that other kids wouldn't like because he has a dad who shows him things that other kids wouldn't see.
Yeah.
We tried watching Jason of Star Command. We got through two episodes and later on I said, hey, you want to watch another one? No. No. It's lame, Dad. And I did not argue at all because I'm just like, I thought you liked it, so we were going to watch it. But if you don't like it, we will stay far away.
There you go.
All right. And V. Wow, V.
V, I think it was 1983, right around Return of the Jedi.
I remember watching that on a TV that we snuck into my cousin's room because it was we had to go to bed. And so we snuck the black and white TV into my cousin's room. We had a pillow above the TV ready to slap it down over the screen because you couldn't just turn it off. It still glowed after you turned it off in the dark.
Right.
And so we had to have this pillow ready to drop over the screen. And we only watched the first part. But that was really scary stuff for a kid.
It was.
You know.
Yeah. Because it was,
Well, 83. If anyone hasn't seen it
at this point, I don't know.
I would check it out, though. I mean, it's a good, it's a interesting, again, relic of the 80s there.
Right, yeah.
And
it's been remade.
But it was a surprisingly, the storytelling was surprisingly dense and had a lot going on. And
it wasn't kiddish.
No, not at all. And when they did the TV series, you know, you had this like underground trying to, you know, survive while the aliens were in charge. And I mean, all these references to Nazis and concentration camps and genetic modification and just it's and flying spaceships and laser guns.
Well, of course.
So, all right. So light side or dark side for Jason of Star Command?
I don't know.
I'm going dark side right there.
Nostalgia wise, you know, it might be a light side, but I don't think there's no impact.
Yeah.
There's no relevance to it. So
I can't give it any, anything.
No.
I watched it as a kid a little bit. It was serial storytelling too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was continued from episode to episode.
Yeah.
And the light side or dark side. I would say light side on that.
Yeah, I would say light side. It didn't have the huge impact that they probably were going for, but it did launch a television series. It had a remake, comics. It had a ton of stuff that was connected to it. So
yeah, the comics were DC, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
That was when they were doing Star Trek comics, or just started doing Star Trek comics.
Yeah, right around the time.
And that was going to be another big franchise for them. I think they might have even gone longer than the TV show. Maybe. So let's get into Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers, because those, man.
Yeah.
They would not have gotten made without Star Wars. And
that was appointment television right there.
Well, the thing with Battlestar Galactica was, it's Glenn Larson saying, oh, Star Wars is popular. Hey, I got a TV show about Star Wars. But it's Battlestar Galactica, and people are going to love it.
Yeah, just like they love Mormonism.
I keep saying that.
It was heavily influenced by Mormonism.
It was, but it's not like the Force in Star Wars, where...
So a discerning Christian should be watching it and just picking it up left and right.
And then there's me, I guess. Yeah. So, nice. Yeah, so you have Battlestar Galactica, which... then turned into Galactica 1980.
Yeah.
And
sure did.
Then you have Buck Rogers, who comes along and he's blasting and shooting against the evil empire that's on the other side of the gate or whatever. And then they turned Buck Rogers into Star Trek.
Yeah.
For the second season and added a Spock character who has the worst feather wig ever. But that was appointment television for kids. And, you know,
it was Tuesdays for Battlestar Galactica, and I think Thursdays for Buck Rogers.
It was not for me. I don't remember what days it was on. I remember watching it Saturday mornings.
Well, you were an infant at the time, I think.
No. So. We're talking 78, 79.
Yeah.
I was 4 and 5 years old. I watched it Saturday morning. I lived up in Canada, and they had it on Saturday morning.
So you're barely walking. You were probably still in diapers at the time.
I would like to think that I was not in diapers when I was 4 years old, but we can ask my parents about that for another episode.
That would be cool.
So, yeah, these shows would not have happened without Star Wars, and it's pretty obvious. Yeah, Battlestar Galactica, dark side or light side?
Culturally impacting, light side.
Buck Rogers?
culturally impacting, I'm going to have to put it on the light side, because even though that franchise didn't live on, it renewed interest in Buck Rogers, and you had, you know, Buck Rogers role-playing games and another Buck Rogers book by, what's his name, Michael Kaiden, I think, the guy who did Cyborg, which was the basis for the $6 Million Man. And, you know, you had a renewed interest in the character. So now people sort of know who Buck Rogers is again. Before then, it was like, Buck Rogers? You know, what? Is he a cowboy? So.
All right.
And I would say just barely.
I'm going to go then, staying with television, Battle of the Planets.
Which was
not created as an influence of Star Wars. It was created before Star Wars. Gotcha Man in Japan was a riff on superheroes. And so Sandy Frank, he sees it and says, you know what? If we made this into an English thing where we could show it in America, all we would have to do is make some slight tweaks and we could really ride on the whole Star Wars wave.
Yeah.
And so they did. They took out some of the violence that was a little too violent for afternoon television. And they added, you know, they translated it into English, but it was not a translation at all. They completely changed everything and they just watched the show and decided, oh, okay, we got some robot things doing that and robot things doing this, and here's what they're doing and here's why. They did not follow any kind of continuity from the Japanese program except for what you saw on the screen. They took things out that were too violent and added scenes in that were interstitial scenes between one action scene to another, where it, you have a robot.
To do with Gacha Man.
Well, yeah, it's Seven's Arc 7, the R2-D2 C-3PO hybrid.
And one Rover 1.
And one Rover 1, the robot dog. And they have a control room that they are in. And every once in a while, they would bring in a very static animated, very static animation of one of the main characters. Obviously, it was not made by the same people or drawn by the same people or anything like that.
Basically just one of the characters in a pose
and a moving mouth.
And not moving
at all. And so you have Seven's Arc 7. He looks like R2-D2. He has feet like R2-D2. He has arms though, and a cape. And so when he wants to move, across the room, he jumps in the air, flaps his cape and flies the 7 feet from one side of the room to the other so he can use the control panel. And then you have one Rover 1 that spins his tail around like a helicopter. And so basically it really kiddified things. And Gacha Man was all on Earth. There was no real space element to it. But Battle of the Planets was all about going to other planets. And so they go to a different country in Gatchaman. Well, in Battle of the Planets, that was another planet. And so they'd have animation that they were creating original for Battle of the Planets that showed the ship flying through space and going faster than time to
get the fiery phoenix.
And so we loved it, though. Man, did we eat it up. Dark side or light side? I'm definitely going light side. I can't go dark side on that. My nostalgia has blinded me.
I have to go cultural impact on it, and it has not fared well culturally. So I'm gonna have to go.
No.
Because they made G-Force after that, which was another just cut and paste hash of the whole thing.
No. But you got to look at what it did for bringing over these other shows as well, and what it did for
really
creatives.
Them?
It wasn't the same people who brought them over, no, but it was because that one was successful enough.
I don't know. I think more, you know, Battleship Yamamoto or Star Blazers, Kimba the White Lion, things like that. I think those had more of...
No, without Battle of the Planets, you wouldn't have had Robotech coming over.
Well, okay, if they had that impact on it, then I would put them on the light side.
I've won. Okay. So I've got a couple that kind of go beyond the limits of time. that I kind of set on this. But these obviously would not have happened without Star Wars, and probably were started with production before Empire Strikes Back was also successful. But I might be wrong. But well, one of them is Dune.
Okay, Dune, yeah, yeah.
Dune, you know, it's kind of, this is the snake eating its own tail. But, you know, George Lucas pulled on a lot of elements from Dune, especially with Tatooine. And Dune then, you know, would have only been greenlit because Star Wars was successful. They tried to make Dune earlier, and they couldn't.
Was that 84 or was it? No, that must have been 80.
Dune was 83 or 84. Should we bring back our guest star?
I think we're going to bring
back our guest star. Hey, Wikipedia, come back. 84.
84, okay.
But Wikipedia says attempts to adapt Dune for a film began as early as 1971.
Wow.
In 1981, David Lynch was hired by Dino De Laurentiis. David Lynch directed it, and I like the movie, but I'd read the book before I saw the movie. So yeah. I think I understood it when I watched it in a way that I wouldn't have if I had not seen it or not read the book.
But they completely, I mean, they did a switch on, I mean, they made it a heroic story instead of a, you know, a cautionary tale like in the book.
Yeah, yeah, to an extent.
So,
I mean, there's elements of that, what you're talking about in the book, I mean, in the movie, where just because it's has this happy climactic ending, there's still a little bit of a pall on it, but yeah. It's definitely not the book.
No, no. Culturally impactful, I don't think it held up.
No, I think it's Dark Side.
Yeah.
I mean, they made it, they made money, and
that's about it.
I haven't checked with our guest star, Wikipedia, to see if it made back its budget, but it definitely didn't have the impact that the actual book had. So, and I really want to go back and reread Dune, but that's such, it's just a...
it's just dark.
And it's big and long.
Gross.
Like if it was... Well, I haven't read the sequels, or I've read two of them, so I want to reread the whole thing, but I'm never going to do it because it's just so long. So, all right, so that's Dune.
Okay. Same vein as Dune, I think. Last Starfighter.
I was going to go with that, too. That one obviously is, hey, let's make a Star Wars. Okay.
Yeah.
Video games are popular. Let's have it be about a guy who plays video games, so that's how, you know, they know that he can pilot a ship.
Make a Star Wars set on Earth. Yeah.
Let's take Star Wars and let's put... You know how everyone, all those kids related to Luke Skywalker? Let's actually make it about the kid who relates to Luke Skywalker. And they'll relate to him even more. It's a fun movie, though. And I think it does hold up. I think it does hold up.
Culturally impactful, though?
Culturally impactful? No. But
no.
Fans of the genre who are of a certain age... Yes, I'm going to put that on light side. So you're putting on dark side, though.
You know what? I'd have to dig into it a little bit more and figure out what it has spawned. You know, and because I don't know, I mean, I'm sure something has come of it, and if it still has a huge fan following and things like that, you know, I haven't followed it at all, so but it does have that feel good. It's one of the better Star Wars ripoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
If anything,
yeah, and that's what puts on the light side for me.
Okay,
so
the other one that was sort of in the same vein, but it was done right before Return of the Jedi, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
Blade Runner wouldn't have happened because without Star Wars, especially. Getting Harrison Ford in there.
Yeah, Harrison Ford. And I think that was one of the big selling points for it.
And the director of Alien.
And the director of Alien, you're right.
Which is, you know, he wouldn't have been a marquee name for science fiction movie without Alien. And Alien wouldn't have happened without Star Wars.
Yeah, it would have been a very different movie.
I had not seen Blade Runner, but I had a poster of Harrison Ford from Blade Runner from a poster book that... You know, I had to choose which side of the poster to use, and there was an Enterprise in there, so that one obviously went up on my wall. But I put Harrison Ford up on my wall just because he was Indiana Jones and Han Solo, even though the picture was him from Blade Runner. So, yeah, and I hadn't seen the movie. I mean, that was an R-rated movie, and it deserved the R.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, mostly. I mean, there's a lot of violence, a little bit of nudity, a bunch of language.
I'm not a fan of that movie. I understand it and respect it for what it is in science fiction history.
Yeah.
But
I had been a fan of it, but it's sort of taken on a life of its own where now there's like five different cuts of the movie and each one tells a slightly different story and et cetera, et cetera. So at some point you just have to say, you know what? I want one story. You know, it's not a myth. It's not Superman where you can retell the story every 10, 20 years and make it slightly different and all that stuff. So it doesn't have that impact to it. And I think it's,
for me, you know, it's as far as, you know, cultural impact or whatever, it had a huge cultural impact and a big science fiction impact as well. But it's very bleak. And the way you're talking about it with the, you know, five different endings, I wanted to get that box set that had all of them and watch them all and compare them all and everything. And then I realized there's other things I want to watch that I actually want to watch instead of just, I'm going to watch this and study it because it's, you know, something worth studying.
Yeah.
Which goes totally against what I say about 2001 as far as, you know, you need to see 2001 to study it and understand it because... Right. Because it's, you wouldn't have what you have without 2001, but it's a different kind of thing, I think.
Yeah. And so. Culturally impactful, I think it is, even though it didn't, you know, spawn a lot of other stuff directly, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of, what are you talking about?
No, it had a lot of impact on things that just drew from the environment of that movie. Right.
It drew from it. Yeah. And in the whole, you know, dystopian, you know, cyberpunk feel to it and everything.
Yeah.
But directly, I mean, having things that were marketed as, you know, there was never a Blade Runner 2.
There's a Blade Runner TV show.
Was there?
No, no, that was Total Recall. There's a Total Recall TV show.
Okay.
But it acted as like a semi-sequel to Blade Runner.
Huh. Okay. So. Didn't see that. But I think it had enough... people picked it up and ran with it. And it just, I think, having five different... I don't know if it's five or four or whatever, but having that many...
I think it might be five.
Having that many iterations of the same film, I think, sort of speaks to its... legs. So I would have to put it on the light side in that way, even though I wouldn't highly recommend it to many people unless you can tolerate a lot of brutality and stuff like that.
And I put it on the dark side just because I don't like it. And that's how I'm that's how I'm doing the measure here.
That's fine. I have no problem with that.
Okay, so I've got a couple movies more. We need to kind of zip through these though.
I have an entire genre that we haven't hit up against, but why don't you go ahead with yours, and then if anything touches that, then I can jump off on mine.
Outland. Sean Connery, it's High Noon in space.
Didn't see it.
Really? You haven't seen that movie?
No, I think I requested it with my wife, and she just was...
She probably wouldn't like it very much.
Didn't want to.
I don't know if you would like it very much. It's Sean Connery, so there's that, and it definitely plays off of that alien vibe. And you can almost feel like these are the same universe.
Okay.
Alien in this movie. But it's basically, you know, it's high noon in space, where he's waiting for the, in the Western, he's waiting for the stagecoach to come at noon so he can have the shootout and he's going to die.
Right.
And that's what this movie is. He's waiting for the space ship stage to come
coach
at noon and he's going to have a shootout with him and die. It's a decent movie, but it's not a great movie. So, no. But it wouldn't have gotten greenlit without Star Wars and someone saying, hey, what about this? A Western in space, like Star Wars, only with Sean Connery. They put Roger Moore in space over at James Bond. Let's put the real James Bond in space now.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
So, and then I've got one that I can kind of put these two together because they have a similar feel. But you have Crawl. Yeah, which a movie that most people I've talked to do not like, cannot stand. But I do know my artist friend Tim Barron and I, we will stand together on Crawl. I love Crawl.
Not a big Crawl fan.
But it's got stormtroopers. It's got an evil empire.
It's not like I hate it. And it's got a special princess, weapon.
And it's got a special weapon. It's got not a lightsaber, but the Glaven, I think is what it is.
Glaven.
It's a 5-pointed thing that you press a button and blades come out and he throws it. And you throw it at monsters and destroy them and those weird stormtrooper characters. It also has a Cyclops who he can see the future, but the cost is he sees the moment of his death and knows when he will die. And it's very tragic. And you have flying horses that run so fast they walk on fire or something like that. It's definitely it's got laser guns and swords. I mean, it's this whole kind of swashbuckling spacefaring fantasy that you get from Star Wars. And and then along with that, with the special weapon and everything that you were talking about, you have Tron, which they have the frisbee things that they were throwing. And Tron was another movie that definitely was riding on that science fiction wave that Star Wars kind of started there. And then finally,
in a very different way, it was more based on, you know, the Pong, you know.
Yeah, No, it was based on video games. It was not outer space. It was inner. Yeah. It was in a computer and not out in space. But you come in and you've got the special weapon. You've got the hero. You've got the Force. I mean, you've got a lot of elements that come from Star Wars and become this different thing.
Right.
And then one I just had to put on here because the only reason it was made like this. Oh, but wait. I forgot. There's one more here. This influenced by Star Wars in the same way. And I'm going to look it up right now. Clash of the Titans.
The Titans, yeah.
What year was Clash of the Titans?
It was, what, 1981?
81. Yeah. And then 83 was Hercules.
Hercules.
And both of them were fantasy myth movies with science fiction-y twists. Right. In Clash of the Titans, you had all the myth stuff as myths, but then you had the R2-D2 owl.
R2-D2.
Yeah, I mean, that guy was R2-D2, and he was only there because of R2-D2. And then you have Hercules, where every monster he fights is a robot monster. It's from space, you know? I mean, it was made that way because of Star Wars, I'm convinced. So those are, you know, and so I look at Crawl. For me, that's light side. I look at Hercules. For me, that's dark side. Even though I do get some pleasure watching Lou Ferrigno being just Lou Ferrigno and actually having lines, then Tron I would put on the light side. What about you?
I'd say Tron light side, the other two dark side, just because of the cultural impact of them.
And then Clash of the Titans?
Didn't follow. Clash of the Titans, if this was 5 years ago, I would probably say dark side because, you know,
without Clash of the Titans they wouldn't have made the sequel.
So, you know, all of a sudden it has new legs. Now it's a franchise. So
I should have pushed you to go more personal on it. I didn't. Oh, well.
No, you don't want that. And I would also throw two other ones in there in the fantasy realm. Heavy Metal, which has a lot of nudity. So not for our audiences. And also, was it Frank Bakshi, I think, Lord of the Rings?
Where... Yeah, I don't know if that is something that directly was greenlit because of Star Wars.
I think I'd have to look.
Because you had
it.
The Hobbit come out from
that was 77.
Rankin Bass.
Yeah.
And then Rankin Bass lost. No, they didn't. Maybe they didn't have the rights to the Lord of the Rings.
Well, so, they did the Return of the King.
Right, they did that after Bakshi did his.
Yes.
And they did theirs basically instead of starting at the beginning, they did the end because the beginning had already been done for them. So.
Right. Yeah. They did it cleverly, but at the same time, it was sort of like, wow, really? 90 minutes and you did all three books? Or six books, or however many you want to count.
Okay, so but, what's the kind of genre thing that,
that you it was say? Sort of like a fantasy based science fiction influence type of a feel to it. So you know, heavy metal, you had very much a lot of fantasy and a lot of science fiction jammed in together.
All right. Well, I think we should probably wrap up here. Okay. Come back soon and we will be talking about Sloth from the Seven Deadly Sins.
Yeah.
When we get around to it. How many times are we going to use that joke? I think we've already used it 5 times in emails and twice on podcasts. So,
well, we will stop using that joke
when we get around to it.
Yeah. When we get around to it.
Yeah, and so we've got some fun stuff planned. We're also, don't forget, we're reading C.S. Lewis. We're reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe this month, January 2013. So
my daughter was bristling when we started it, but now every time we end a chapter, she's like, why do they always end it on a cliffhanger? I'm like, that's why.
Well, my wife didn't know we were doing this for the podcast, and she has chosen to do The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe as a thematic unit for our homeschooling.
Wow.
Which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So. All right. Well, we're going to say goodbye then. And thank you very much for listening. And thank you, Steve, for joining me.
You're very welcome.
And
Dr. Jace, we miss you.
He'll be around next episode. Godspeed.
This was the Strangers and Aliens podcast with Ben Avery, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and Stephen MacDonald. Our music was written, recorded, and mixed by Tim Luffel. Visit our website, www.strangersandaliens.com, where we have reviews, articles, and links. We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens. We're on Twitter, where we are under the name Strange and Alien. You can contact us through our website by writing a message or leaving us a voicemail using your computer's microphone or emailing us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com. Finally, you can call us and leave a message. Our number is 1-840-37-ALIEN. That's 1-840-372-5436. Thank you for listening.
Ginger was trying to get jobs in movies. By the way, I'm looking out of the corner of my eye here because we are also listening to the 8th Annual Podcast Awards Ceremony. And so they're on the comedy category. Sorry to interrupt, but religion will be far down the alphabet. So we've got some time, but we're going to get our live reaction to this. Okay, so Ginger wants to make... We're not going to go in any particular order. We're just going to start talking about some of these, and the conversation will, I think, go to other places as well with this. And while we're talking about this, we'll be peeking out of the corner of our eye to see what categories they're coming up on with the podcast awards ceremony to see if we can defeat the Sci-Fi Christian. They're on education right now. Them. Okay. By the way, Steve, you know how I can tell that we're probably not going to win the podcast awards ceremony?
Why?
Because every single winner has been there. So my guess is if you were invited to go there and told you probably should come, you did, and you won. But they never called me.
Since we weren't told to come,
They're on the general category right now. And
everyone, they've
been there. How people are just looking for a way to be connected.
Here we are.
Wait, what? It is. Religion Inspiration. Oh, it's the podcast. Sorry. We are going to watch the podcast. Religious Inspiration. Let's see. Here he is. Oh.
What do you say?
I don't know. They're in their audience. They must have won.
Yeah.
They just said, encouraging others through Christ, and there was a big cheer.
Marcel Church Sermons, more than one lesson. They misspelled it.
They still misspelled it.
Reasonable Doubts.
Mormon Sharecast won last time. They just said our name.
Yeah. Winner is...
The Atheist won? Wow. Oh, they did get organized. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh, what are we going to do? Now we have to find out. We have to ask them how we did.
That's
too bad.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well.
Maybe we can edit this part of the show.
To all you strangers and aliens out there, thank you for giving us your votes. And yeah. Next year, maybe we'll do better. Let's see what's he saying. He's talking now. He said, thank you. And
then he left. He pretended like he had a long list of stuff.
And then they
to
left. That's interesting.
Was that Ilea that was next to him?
And then he said appropriately, now science. Okay.
I guess they're just they're just poking fun.
Because you know, because obviously Christians religion has nothing to do with science. Yes. Christians don't believe science is real. Ah.
That's right.
All
right,
well.
Except for Christian Science, I guess.
Hey, funny story there. When I was a kid, there was a church that was the Christian Scientist Church,
mm-hmm.
and we would pass it every time we would drive into the town. And I wanted to be a scientist. I was a Christian, so one day we drove past it, and I finally said to my dad, Dad, when I grew up, I want to go to church there because I want to be a scientist, and I'm a Christian. And my dad just laughed and laughed and laughed.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why until years later. Okay, so.
Just a disclaimer, Christian Science is a cult.
Yes, sorry.
Spoiler!
They believe some things that, you wouldn't Christian. Find, you know, in the Bible.
Yeah.
So.
Extra biblical.
All right. So you're talking about Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, yeah.
And light side or dark side?